All right, folks, welcome back to Stick a Fork in It, your favorite podcast on the whole entire internet. We're glad you're here. Thanks for coming back for another one.
Yeah.
And the thing on our minds today is it seems like we all kind of have a little bit of a set of rules that we live by, maybe that we've developed over the years. I've heard a few of Tom's, I think, before. And I'm curious to know, like, for the listeners, what would you guys say is, like, a big rule that you try to live by?
Go first, Thomas.
Well, I took the liberty of looking up. Yeah. I certainly do have rules that you should live by. But I thought we ought not
go
over.
We know we work here. Go ahead.
Rules
sorry.
To work by.
All right. Well, I might have suggested people follow them more closely, but we're not going to go there. But I found some very interesting rules that people have decided they should live by in this world. I thought I would run a few of them by you to see what you thought of them.
Okay.
Here's number one. By the orange properties in Monopoly. How did this ever become a rule? And who is playing Monopoly enough that they have developed?
Right? I don't.
Nope.
All right. Here's an important one. Invest in great luggage.
Great luggage.
You really don't want to find out the hard, right? You don't want to find out the hard way that.
But it comes across the belt on its wide open and your stuff is everywhere. Yeah.
This is one I would struggle with. Mm-hmm. Do not fill up on bread, no matter how good.
Oh, I can't live by that.
Yeah, that's too rude. Yeah.
Right? Bread or chocolate, which is your choice?
Bread.
It's a mood thing for me, both.
You can't have both. That's not what a choice is.
Bread.
A choice is one. By the very nature of choice, it's one or the other.
I choose both.
Okay. Here's one I like. Don't linger in the doorway, in or out.
Yeah, that's fair.
Right? One or the other. Yeah,
don't be a cat.
It's like the person in the elevator who gets into the elevator before everybody else has gotten out. Do they not understand you're supposed to let people?
Oh, yeah. Right? No.
Yeah.
Yep,
right?
yep.
Okay. Be mindful. Some of the people who wrote these, very creative. Mm-hmm. Be mindful of what comes between you and the earth. Always buy good shoes, tires, and sheets. Very well thought out. If you wanted a rule to live by, that one's...
Yeah. Considering people, I think around our table, we're shoe people.
Well, yeah.
Definitely shoe people.
Yeah. Right. I go with the shoe thing.
Right. This one I've been concerned about before. Never get a haircut the day of a special event.
That's fair, yeah.
I think that's a guy thing.
Yeah.
Really?
Last minute, like, well, yeah.
You're not afraid of what will happen if something goes awry? You have no recovery time.
Or are you saying that that's something I think guys would do?
I think that's something that a guy would do. Right, like you get, and it's shorter and it's less, it's easier for me to hide somebody messing up my hair than it would be for you.
That's fair.
If you had like a across,
that's a good point.
Right?
Right.
I don't know.
It's hard to wear hats to events.
Mm-hmm. It's the clear.
Again, these come off the internet. This is our greater republic coming up with their best ideas. The first step towards true greatness is wearing clean underwear.
Okay.
Did you have that as a rule from your parents? Wear clean underwear?
Definitely.
Well, I mean, I guess that's assumed. I don't know.
I don't think there's
Who are these people?
Are there any rules that you guys had in your life that you live by?
I mean, I don't have any like rules. I just have like mantras, which is very bleh. Well, like I think that like understanding is a superpower. Like trying to like understand people and be understanding is like maybe that's a rule.
We're going metaphysical.
Know. Yeah, right.
Like
yeah.
It's much different than wearing clean underwear.
I can join into that because curious.
Right.
Follows because that would be mine.
Yeah.
Mine is by the orange properties of Monopoly.
The only thing
rule
I
live
about.
By.
We'll know that when we play Monopoly with him.
Every hotel.
And then this just so happens that this is one of my new ones, and it's an unwritten rule that if you are watching a show on TV with someone, that they do not jump ahead of you and mess up the vibe or know the stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's rude.
Do you think they do it and don't tell you? Or are they letting you know that they've done this to you?
Well,
sounds
you turn
like this
it
is
on.
A personal experience
Ever
kind
since
of.
Since that one time.
No, it's when you turn it on and it's all jumped ahead like 3 or 4.
Oh, so they haven't even thought to rewind it or act like that.
You can't. Right. It's marked on the.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
That and then your kids that are, you know, kind of poaching.
Do you
Netflix.
Let your kids? Right. So that's a definite. My kids can do any. They can take anything I have. I don't care about. But do not screw up my accounts with Netflix.
Yeah.
All those. Do not go in there and get me locked out.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, change your password.
That has happened to me. So then you pay the $6.99 extra so your kids, can have
No, I'm not doing that. Speaking of rules.
Yes.
Yeah.
one of my favorite rules that we learned from a friend of Feeding Tampa Bay, mm-hmm. because we just love working with these folks, mm-hmm. Dennis Phillips of ABC Action News.
Man, is this a big guest.
I mean, you were talking about rules. I'm like, are they throwing me a softball here?
Yeah.
I mean, did you hear any of the rules we had surprise you?
I thought they were interesting, and I was going to comment on a lot of it, but I didn't think it was my turn yet.
So, it's your turn now.
So, no, I was just
and we know
there.
He's a shoe guy,
yeah.
right?
I got my dad's
dad
shoes on right now.
Yeah. Yes, you do. He's got his dad's shoes.
I mean, those were interesting rules. And I have six kids, so the ones where they're going ahead. And a lot of times what happens with us is one of the six kids will find a show before anybody else has. And they'll then let everybody know. So watching it all together is a challenge.
Yeah. Right.
But, I mean, we've done that. I mean, lately there's been four or five that have just been great. And Severance was my oldest son got everybody in on. Yeah. And it's kind of challenging because when you have a 31-year-old son who's a doctor and then you have a 10-year-old daughter, and to try to find one that everybody can watch, and Severance was clearly not one of those.
Yes.
Yeah.
Are the different folks letting the cat out of the bag on the shows?
No, in fact, I'm probably the worst person about that because I'll be dumb. I'll be like, hey, but what? But this person died. I don't understand.
Right. You're like, why would you say that?
Yeah. Right, exactly. Right. And I'm very guilty of that, and my kids hate me for that.
Yeah.
But they're usually, I mean, I think younger people are usually pretty good at keeping that secret. As a matter of fact, going on the internet, like there was what just happened? Oh, Last of Us episode
yes.
2
mm-hmm.
was a, without yeah, giving away
you
any
have
spoilers,
to, yeah.
but that was a massive thing. And it isn't just your family. It's just going on the internet.
Yeah.
You can't click on certain articles
yeah.
and then
you got to scroll past it really quick so you don't know what happened.
Or X, I mean, forget it.
You're right.
It just can't happen.
Yeah. Well, it happens in an instant.
Complimenting or ripping it, one or the other.
Or giving it away.
Yeah. Right.
In that case, that was, that was a big one if you played the video games.
Right.
I didn't even know that was a video game.
It started.
Oh, well, of course you.
I've played both of them. I've only seen the first season of the show. But
and
yes.
I will tell you, this is how warped I was with that show. So I've never played the game. My kids, I don't know if they have or not, but I so loved season one that I actually went in and watched somebody on YouTube play the game.
Wow.
For 12 hours
wow.
to see how it ended. Because I thought, am I going to be around here in 4 years when they finally get to season three?
So you already
three?
Know how this ends?
I know how it ends.
All right.
And I was expecting.
Zip it.
Right.
I'm not. But episode two was a big episode. And there was a ton of people who play the game, and you know what I'm saying,
right.
wanting to know if it was going to be exactly the same.
Yeah.
And it mostly was.
I was, again, without giving the listener, I was so angry.
Yep.
Yeah, I get it.
Because I thought it was a clever trick
mm-hmm.
by the makers of the show. I didn't realize it was part of the...
Mm-hmm. It absolutely was. And people are listening right now.
I was like, that's it, I'm not watching.
Well, I haven't watched... I watched the first. I haven't started the second season.
Would you like us to tell you the second season?
Yeah, spoil it for you.
So, rules.
Rules.
Don't spoil things.
Rule number seven.
Yeah.
It's crazy how that got started. And
yeah,
for folks
that's
who aren't
what we
familiar
were
with
ask.
It,
right.
rule number seven is nothing more than don't freak out unless I'm freaking out. We're fine. And talking about a hurricane. Well, in that particular case, it was talking about one hurricane specifically. It was back in 2012. Hurricane Isaac was coming this way. And if you remember, the RNC, the Republican National Convention,
was here
in Tampa. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And everybody, it's always the ice storms too.
Hmm.
Irma, Ian, Isaac.
Interesting.
You know, but anyway, everybody was freaking out. And they were talking about moving the RNC to Jacksonville because they were convinced we were going to get hit by this really bad hurricane. And I'm like, no, it's not going to be that bad. So literally in 5 minutes, I just jotted down these rules about that particular storm, saying how there's going to be swings in the models, but at the end of the day, don't freak out, we're fine. That somehow turned into something so much more. And, and I think it did because I found out afterwards the message is still the same. Mm. How can you make decisions for your family, for the livelihood of your family, to protect your family if you're freaking out?
Yeah.
Right.
You got to have your head screwed on straight. Yeah. And so in hurricane season, I always wondered after we had a big storm, would rule number seven then become passé because, I am freaking out. We're not fine.
Right.
And last hurricane season may have been as close as it gets.
Yeah. Right.
There's so much rich content I want to ask you about, but I want to just a brief aside. You shared this with us. The listener may know that you came in and did a distribution with us, and we're here on campus at Causeway, which we really enjoyed. But you shared the significant difference in the size of your following across your social channels. Can you share that with folks? Like, what happened to your social position once the hurricanes came through and you know,
I mean, I had, so Paul Delgado and I, Paul's a buddy of mine, Fox, meteorologist at Fox, and him and I, our numbers in terms of followers on Facebook and Insta, and he doesn't do TikTok. I've started doing TikTok a few years ago, but we were really close, like within 5,000 or 6,000 followers of difference. I had 500 and some odd, he had 500 and some odd. After Helene and Milton, I went from 500 and some odd thousand to about 1.5 million.
Oh my God. Wow.
So did he's way behind me now.
Yeah. Something tells me the way you approach things works.
So aside from lording that over Paul Delgado, were you able to monetize this? Have you?
Well, you know what? Technically, we're not really allowed to do that sort of thing, but I know people who do and do so on a massive scale. And we've all heard about content creators.
Yeah.
Yes.
And, you know, me being an older guy is like, yeah, I don't believe it. No, it is a thing.
Yeah.
It is very much a thing. And,
right.
And you know, TikTok was, for a while, I think TikTok was offering more in terms of monetization because I guess they were trying to get people away from Insta and Facebook. I think Mark Zuckerberg decided at some point, I'm not going to have any more of that because Facebook and Insta has now actually, I know people who do all of them, and they said Facebook, believe it or not, monetizes more than Insta and TikTok, which is and Twitter X.
Yeah.
So I think because they were realizing for a period of time, you know, recently I'd say Facebook was becoming kind of second. I mean, I don't want to say, you know what I'm saying. Yeah. I mean, people were more on TikTok.
It fell behind.
Yeah, it was.
Right.
And a lot of my grandmother follows on TikTok.
Yes.
Facebook, that sort of thing.
Our parents are on it.
Right.
Right.
But you know, like I said, I have 6 kids and. And even my younger ones, now granted, they still skew, I think, more toward TikTok and Insta, but they're on Facebook as well. So I think whatever they were trying to do to get content to be a little younger, a little more relevant, I think has worked.
So how do you think about, you now have a following? There are people that are wondering what you're thinking, what you're doing. How do you think about all, I'm going to ask you in a few minutes, we'll ask you about your journey into becoming a meteorologist, but I would have to assume that the journey to a meteorologist did not start with thinking 1.5 million people across this planet would be following you on a daily basis.
Yeah. It
has to be surreal to some
really
extent.
It really is. And it's funny you say that. Just yesterday, I was walking out of the studio, and that struck me. And I just kind of shook my head because I don't get it. I know a lot of people say, oh, how did this happen? Truly, how did this happen? I don't understand. I'm just a guy who loves his community, and I feel as though, and I will tell you, as I've gotten older, look, when I first started doing weather, all I cared about was getting the weather right. I thought that was my job. You know, you get the weather right, nothing else is important. And I learned in this community, after we started having some really close calls with Charlie and with Irma, and I saw the fear in people's eyes, and I felt the fear in the community, and it struck me. It really did, and it made me really empathetic toward what everybody was going through. And I think that's probably, as I got older, you just kind of get that way a lot of times. I mean, some do, some don't, I guess. But in my case, I did, and it just made me feel as though I wanted to do everything I can to stop scaring people when it comes to these storms, because there's a lot of folks out there that thrive on fear.
Yes.
And I think ultimately my opinion is, look, those people are going to get play. People are going to see them and they're going to listen to them. But I think at the end of the day, they're finally at some point in time going to realize, I don't need that nonsense. You know, give me somebody who isn't trying to scare the bejesus out of me every time and maybe giving me more of the real deal and what I think is going to happen. And I try not to candy coat things, but on the other side of the coin, I try to be real and be like, all right, this is what we truly think is going to happen. I'm not going to give you a worst case scenario every time like a lot of folks do.
But just one other question before we jump back into this. So does your following interact with you regularly now that you're in a place where they are right? I mean, do they, are they a part of your world? Sometimes, so I follow you, and so sometimes I see you answer questions, sometimes you don't, you know, the folks post. What's your relationship like with these folks? Are they, are you blocking people constantly?
Oh, I should have brought it with me. I have a button, it's called a ban button. And when people talk politics, or they troll, or they spam, bomb, I break out that ban button. And it's become a thing now where my followers, especially when I'm live, and we, you know, I'm streaming live a couple of days a week, and starting July 1, I'm going to be streaming live 5 days a week because our station just made a deal to pick up all the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Yeah, we saw that.
Yeah,
congrats.
Yeah.
So it's technically not our station, but it's a station that we also possess, I guess. I don't know how that works. But anyway, so that we're going to have all the preseason games, all the regular season games, and then they have a lot of local content to fill when those games aren't being played. And in my show, DPL, which was just kind of on Facebook and streaming, is now all of a sudden going to go on broadcast 5 days a week with the whole nine yards. So, I mean, it's – and the answer to your question is, yes, it is a virtual world where there's people who are interacting with me virtually, but don't think for a minute that they don't show up in real life as well. I get people at my front door – during hurricane season, almost every night, bringing me a case of Diet Dr. Pepper.
Oh, yeah.
It's a true story.
How great is that?
And I'll look at my Ring doorbell 3 in the morning. My dogs are barking. My wife's freaking out. I'm like, nah, it's just somebody bringing soda. You know, and it happens all the time. But it is so endearing because these folks, and usually it's after a storm, they're looking for some way to repay just that you made them maybe feel a little bit better. Yeah. And Diet Dr. Pepper seems to be the elixir of choice.
This is how did that start? It's just you made a comment and now you have a garage full of Diet Dr. Pepper?
It started back in 2004 with Hurricane Charlie. And that's actually when I started wearing suspenders for the first time as well, which was kind of a crazy story. Prior to Hurricane Charlie, I wore a jacket every day I did weather for 15 years. And when I was going into the station to cover the storm, I had one pair of suspenders to my name, and I happened to have them on for no reason. I just happened to put them on. Well, when you're on the air for 40 straight hours, which we were, you take your jacket off, and I happened to have a pair of suspenders on. Mm. So after the storm left and after the station did all this research, who did you watch? Who did you like? The overwhelming response, I have no idea what the guy's name was, but he was wearing a pair of suspenders.
I love it.
And now you have 1.5 million followers.
Yeah, right. Yes. And my boss goes, that's your new shtick.
Yeah. Wow. So, and buy more suspenders.
Yes. And at that point, I started, you know, there was a lot of talking on air for a long period of time, and I started talking about the fact that I drink Diet Dr. Pepper and eat Hot Pockets that's my sustenance during storm coverage.
Oh, man.
And it just kind of went from there. In fact, Dr. Pepper reached out to me a couple years ago for a
an endorsement.
Oh my god, stop!
I love it.
Yeah, it's funny.
I love it. That so. And the dad shoes. What are they? New Balance.
New Balance. Yeah,
it's a certain.
There you go for the viewers.
These aren't the traditional
ones. No, I'm like, you're stepping up on
that. Well, my son gave me these in hopes of trying to make me a little cooler.
Okay, we do that.
My son, who's a big fashionable guy.
Right. Yeah.
The white ones, the dad shoes. Yeah. The white ones are the ones
that I have. The kind of chunky dad shoes is what you've been known for.
Yes. And that's what I have. And I've got ones to mow the lawn in. I've got ones to do this in. And they're all stacked up. And that just, I don't even know how that became a thing. But my biggest post I've ever made, bigger than any hurricane post or anything I've ever done, was when I, right after COVID, when I got onto a plane and went to New Orleans to go to my son graduating medical school, I just took a picture of my dad's shoes on the plane, you know, with the aisle, facing the aisle, and for whatever reason, it just took off.
Wow.
Bigger than any hurricane post, bigger than anything. So and that, sums up social media.
Yeah.
You have no idea what the heck's going to basically work and what isn't going to work, right?
Well, I think part of it is showing who you are, right? When it comes to living in Florida and having somebody that you trust, you know, you can have all the education in the world, but I do think you present yourself as someone who is the guy next door and someone that people can relate to.
Yeah, I think, you know,
not that Paul doesn't, but you definitely have the dad
Paul
shoes.
And so, no kidding, Paul. You know, I think, you know, it's interesting. I think there's responsibility to a community and then there's obligation to a community, and they're different. We think about this often in our work. You know, our responsibility to the community is to make sure that there's resources where resources are needed, whatever that looks like. our obligation to the community is to take care of them. And those are two very different things. And both of them, I think when you're doing your job well, you understand it's both. And you spoke to that beautifully when you said, I used to think my job was the weather. And mm-hmm. it is. Mm-hmm. You know, that's my responsibility. Facts, figures, data, information, analysis. But my obligation is to make sure that the folks that come into my world are cared for.
But you know what? I would push back a little bit on that from my perspective, in the sense that I don't look at it as an obligation. I truly don't. I look at it as a privilege. Mm. I swear I do. And that's, you know, I get emotional teary-eyed thinking about it, because I've had so many people over the last 5 or 10 years come up to me, and they're just genuinely appreciative mm-hmm. of the coverage. Of you're taking somebody by the hand, and you're getting them. You guys, that's what you all do.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're taking someone by the hand and you're getting them through a difficult point in their life.
Yeah.
And yeah. I
doing
just
the same.
And you talked yep. about the guy next door. I am the guy next door.
Yeah.
I mean, and especially at Christmas time.
Yes.
I mean, for anyone who doesn't know, I live in a neighborhood that is just obsessed with Christmas, mm-hmm. and yep. that's actually how I found our home, because we were driving through looking at the lights and we saw the house that was there mm-hmm. And I am truly Clark Griswold, the good part and the bad part. the good part that gets locked up in the attic and is watching old films of his kids and are crying, you know, like he does in that. Mm-hmm. But the bad part, that the lights don't go on, you kick Santa, the thing Santa flies across the lawn. I am that guy.
Oh, to be
guy.
A neighbor.
I am that guy. Well, the HOA does it, because the problem is what I do is I go on TV and I invite the entire Bay Area to yes. come look at our neighborhood lights, and a lot of people do. So the HOA, which, you know, I don't want to get into it.
They're like, Dennis, can you back off
yes.
of the...
Yeah,
yes.
Right. Yeah. And I'm like, no, don't you guys have these lights out here for a reason? You want as many people to see it as you can, so I'm helping out with that.
You're helping out, but now they have to level up.
Right. Well, you also have a bit different platform than your neighbors.
Yes.
Your reach is a little bit different than yes. your neighbors.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and I apologize kind of, sort of, for that, but mm-hmm. not really.
Kind of, sort of.
Right.
So let me ask you, I'm you know, fascinated by the subject in many ways, but how did you, and for our listeners, mm-hmm. we're going to attach an interview we had the privilege of doing a few years back,
yep.
so you can learn more about Dennis there. But for those that are listening to this story, how did you choose meteorology? How did that end up in your life?
So I was 6 years old, and I lived in Seattle, and it was Christmas Eve, and the weather guy was tracking Santa on radar. And I thought, that has got to be the coolest job on the face of the earth, that you can track Santa and get paid for it. That is a true story. That is when I decided I wanted to be a meteorologist. And you're probably thinking, that's not the direction that I would have thought. Now, granted, back in the mid-70s, when there was one extreme to the other. I mean, and oh, by the way, this was first grade when I was in Seattle. I was six. And I worked in L.A. many, many years later as a meteorologist. And I got a call from someone. This was back in the early 90s. I got a call from someone saying, you didn't happen to live in Bellevue, Washington, did you? I'm like, yeah, I did. She goes, I was in your first grade class, and I remembered you wanted to be a meteorologist.
No way.
Swear to God. Her name was Cindy Moreland, and she had lived in L.A., but she saw me on TV, and she said, gosh, that sounds familiar. And
that like, was, Dennis, look at you.
Yeah.
Okay.
She's paying attention.
You think she's one of the 1.5 million?
Must be.
Gotta be.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
she was one of the first.
Cindy Moreland, if you're out there.
Yes. Message Dennis.
But to follow up, back in the mid-70s, back in 1974, there was a super tornado outbreak. It was really the worst tornado outbreak we've ever had in the country, 700 tornadoes. Wow. And that hooked me, I guess. Mm-hmm. You know, the Santa got me really interested, but I became obsessed with severe weather, you know, when that outbreak occurred, and even to this date. Now they don't let me go out as much because I'm too old, apparently. But, you know, back in the day, even 10 years ago, they had me out chasing, and it's a great story. So Hurricane Rita hit Beaumont, Texas back in 05, I guess it was. It was post Katrina. And we chased it, and we went there, and Beaumont got hit really, really, it was a Cat 5. Wow. And hit as a 4. So I'm out there, And it was, you know, I'm kind of like a kid in a candy store because it's hitting at night and things are falling around all around me. But at the same, and it was frightening. And you at that point, I was still more in the weather rather than the empathetic part of my career, I guess. So anyway, so I'm doing a live shot. After the next morning, there had been a tornado that had hit an area, and there were no one was injured. Everybody evacuated, and there was this tree that was on top of a house. And they wanted me to stand on top of the tree. It was about a 12-foot clearance from the tree down to the ground, and they wanted me to stand on the tree and then pull out and show it, and it would be a neat shot and everything. I'm like, okay. So I got up on this tree, and it wasn't really windy anymore, but I'm up there, and I would stand up, but it would be out of frame here. So I had my foot underneath the base of the, I mean, the tree, the trunk was, I don't know, it was probably at least 3 or 4 feet. It was a good-sized tree. So I had my one foot underneath it to support myself, and I'm thinking I'm okay. So I'm talking on TV, and the live shot ended, and a gust of wind came. And I feel myself starting to go backwards. Now, I thought what was going to happen is I was going to break my leg because my foot was underneath, secured, and it was just going to snap, right? Well, it didn't. What actually happened is I literally did a 180, and I'm hanging upside down 12 feet up, down toward the ground, like I'm on a trapeze. Wow. And my sound guy runs over and grabs the microphone because he didn't want the mic to fall in the water, but he didn't care about me.
The video of this?
Right. I don't know.
It's got to be somewhere.
It has to be.
I wasn't live on air at the time because I just finished my
hit.
Oh, if I had been live, that would have been everywhere.
Yeah.
Joe Papadopoulos was the guy's name who ran to get the mic and not
the mic
me.
From you.
Dennis, you're okay, I'm sure.
Yeah. Enjoying a meal around the table is where possibilities begin. It's where communities come together, important conversations happen, laughter ensues, and lasting memories are made. Our annual Epic Chef Competition celebrates local chefs who tirelessly give their time and effort to provide these moments for us. And in honor of Epic Chef's 10-year anniversary, you can help choose this year's competitors. 6 local chefs have been selected to participate in the kickoff event at the Causeway Center on Monday, June 23rd. Each will showcase their favorite dish while the crowd samples the options and votes for their favorites. Then, the top 4 chefs will proceed to the competition. Visit feedingtampabay.org/epicchef to get your tickets before they run out, and enjoy delicious, exclusive dishes prepared by Tampa's finest culinary minds.
So you begin a career that's, you know, we all know because we watch it all the time. But there's a wide variety of weathercasters, meteorologists, climatologists, right? There's a broad definition of what the profession is. How do you view yourself as a meteorologist? What's your skill and background and training? Like, what's your focus?
I think of myself, I mean, you're exactly right. Meteorology is broken down into so many different, and especially nowadays, because with everybody talking about climate change, and it is such a polarizing topic because it's a political topic. And it's one that I really do my best. Look, why would I want to go out there and know that I'm going to be ticking off half of the people that I say, regardless of what my stance is? And I'm going to say flat out, that is not my background. My background, look, I try to get the weather right 7 days out, and that's hard. How am I going to know what's going to happen 20 years, 30 years down the road? I don't.
Yeah.
So my take on what I do is I really truly believe that if I can get, I try to deal more in the public rather than, look, the weather in Florida, we know what it's going to be like 80% of the time. Hazy sunshine, late day storms, highs in the low 90s from July until October.
So we have a future as a career. Now we know. I want to be a...
Yes, right?
I mean, let's be honest. I mean, everybody says that too. Floridians, yeah, you know, because you do know what the weather's going to be like most of the time, unless we get a hurricane.
Right.
But you know, my background, I graduated Penn State. It's the largest meteorological institution in the world. 1 out of every 4 meteorologists comes from Penn State.
Wow.
It's Oklahoma's...
Facts we did not know.
I know.
Yeah, there you go. Oklahoma's another great school for severe weather more. And for the longest time, like I said, I mean, I was really all about synoptics and forecasting, but I've learned...
Synoptics are, for the listener?
Forecasting. The actual dynamics is the theory behind why things happen, you know, the physics behind it. the dynamics behind it. Synoptics is merely forecasting the weather.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm.
Knowing what it's going to be like tomorrow.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I think that's what I've always enjoyed more. And now I'm just reaping the rewards, I guess, of doing that. I mean, I've been doing this now 39 years.
Wow.
I started,
wow.
I'll be on my 40th because I started in 1986 in Salisbury, Maryland. And I went from Salisbury to Gainesville to 4 months in Providence to Los Angeles and then to here from LA. And I've been here 30 years.
Is there a place weather people? Is there a place like everybody wants to be? Like this is the cool spot because of, right? Because if you're in Providence, you could have a nor'easter, right? Mm-hmm.
And I did, which is why I left.
Right, but not a lot,
me.
You know. Where's like the cool spot to be in the weather world?
You know, there's some, that's why I left
LA. Because Oklahoma would be,
well, exactly.
Right?
If, you, yeah. if you're into tornadoes, you're going to go to Tornado Alley. You're going to go to Oklahoma. You're going to, you know, go to the markets like that. Working in LA, it's the second market in the country in terms of size. So people are like, why would you leave such a large market to come to Tampa? Well, first of all, Tampa is the biggest market in Florida. We're bigger than Miami. We're bigger than Orlando. We're the 12th, 13th, it varies, 14th market in the country. So it's not a little place. It's just the difference from us to compared to Miami, which is like the 15th size market. Miami is two counties, Dade and Broward. That's it. That's their DMA. Mm-hmm. We are 12 counties from Citrus to Sarasota, east to Highlands. So I liken it more because it's, you got a bunch of smaller communities, and it has, to me, this area has more of a Midwest feel where people genuinely seem to care a little bit more about each other, maybe than other parts of the country or other parts of the world or the state. But I mean, at the end of the day, I personally think Florida.
It's got a lot going on.
Yeah. Apparently,
that's,
yeah.
I mean, and that's why what I even said when I left LA. I said, look, you got hurricanes, you got thunderstorms, you got a lot of weather. You don't get snow, but yeah, you do. Because this last year, there was snow in the panhandle.
And in LA, you're saying 72 and sunny.
You were.
With and a smog.
Funny story smog about alert. That. So, they called a SIG alert.
Oh.
Is what they had for a traffic alert. And then you're right, they had smog alerts all the time. But so the one thing I had never experienced was an earthquake. Mm. And I kind of wanted to be in an earthquake just to see what it was like. You know, that's the weather.
He's like running into it.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of that's
the weather
geek in
me, right?
So Northridge quake, 7.1. I was about 15 miles from the epicenter. And 4:21 in the morning. And all of a sudden, it felt like someone... The Jolly Green Giant had your house and was shaking your house.
Wow.
And for the first 10 seconds, it was cool. Because you're like, yes!
Well, if you're Dennis.
Yeah, right.
You know,
yeah.
This is what it's like.
Yeah.
And then after 10 seconds, and it lasted 45 seconds, and all of a sudden you're thinking, is this like the Superman episode, the first Superman movie where California actually breaks off of the U.S.
God,
and just floats away because you don't know if it's the big one or not.
Right, yeah.
And you've got that 35 seconds where it's pretty scary. The irony about it is my oldest son, who's now 31, he was 6 months old, and that is the first night that he slept through the night. The first night he did not wake
well done,
up
son.
Overnight.
Yeah.
He slept right on through. That was some rocking. That
That's
was
like an origin rocking. Story. Yeah, wow.
But anyway, the answer to your question is ultimately is, I mean, Florida's got a lot of severe weather, and if you like thunderstorms, which I do, and you like the challenge of hurricanes, you got all you could use, all you can handle.
Yeah.
Wow. So are you ready?
For hurricane season?
Well, we're into June. We're 1 week into June right now, and here we are.
Yeah, is anybody after last year?
Mm. No. I mean, tell us about last year a little bit.
And that's something that I think it's hard to fathom because, technically we'd always said it had been, as of last year, it was 103 years since a major hurricane made landfall in the Bay Area. You can argue it's been 104 years now.
Yeah, I remember seeing you on TV in exactly that moment where you said to your colleague, well, I guess we're going to have to debate whether it really hit right.
Because
it was just south of us.
Well, yeah. First of all, Helene was 100 miles offshore.
Right.
It made landfall in the Big Bend.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
it was not a major hurricane. Now, we got surge like a major hurricane. But, oh, by the way, if we got an 8-foot surge from a storm that was 100 miles offshore, imagine what it would have been like if we had landfall. That would have been a 14-foot surge.
Wow.
It would have been the devastating. Pinellas County would have been cut off.
Mm.
Literally.
Right. Yeah.
I think it would have become an island.
Yeah,
if the surge was that high.
Yeah.
Milton, again, is Siesta Key, the Bay Area.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's and it, right. it doesn't matter, but it is. You
yeah,
can
but it matters.
Make the argument, but I mean, you can yeah. make the argument yeah. that we still have not had a major hurricane landfalling. But yeah. boy, we certainly had the impacts. Now, not wind. We never had Cat 3 winds in the Bay Area, mm-hmm. even with Milton. When it was hitting the fan mm-hmm. and it was bad, we were getting 90 mile an hour winds, sustained mm-hmm. of maybe 75 to 80.
Right.
So when the trop went, those were gusts of 90. Cat 3 is 110 or greater.
Wow.
So we weren't really anywhere near Category 3 major hurricane winds.
Okay, but that kind of scares me a little bit more. Yeah. We're having this conversation.
It's a good reminder.
I'm moving to Providence. So I heard you loud and clear about the idea of and we like to toe the middle of the line too, about climate change. But is it your perception? Is it real? Is it just the availability of news? Are hurricanes more prevalent today than they were? I've lived in Florida on and off since the 80s. It certainly appears to me that we have more hurricanes today than we've ever had.
It's a great question. I don't know if there's a definitive answer. I'll give you my opinion.
Uh-huh.
If you go back and look at the average number of hurricanes, like every year the NHC will come out and say, this is what we expect, or NOAA will, this is what we expect, this is the average. That average is just based on the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
That average back in the 90s was about 10.4. That average now is 14.5.
Mm.
So just based on the last 30 years, we're now getting 40% more named storms.
Right.
But here's where I think there can be some debate. Does that necessarily mean that that trend is going to continue or not? Or will we have something revert back to another level? In my opinion, this is just my opinion, every year the number of storms that form is going to vary wildly. It is not, look, one of the laziest things in journalism that drives me crazy when I watch network is without fail, you will hear them do a story about a severe weather outbreak. And every single time, the next line is, they'll say, due to climate change. Hmm. It's a bunch of nonsense. Hmm. We've had severe weather for thousands of years, right. and we're going, so you cannot just every time there's a tornado outbreak. I talked about 1974, the worst outbreak we've ever had. That was before a lot of people even ever heard of a concept of climate change or global warming at that point, right?
Mm-hmm.
So my point is, just this hurricane season, right now, the waters in the eastern Atlantic are actually below average.
Hmm.
Last year, they were 2 degrees above average. That will change on a yearly basis. Right. It absolutely will. And the warmer the water, you would think the more storms that form.
Is it, and I know you want to ask specific questions. I'm really sorry I'm geeking out over all this. I know, because part of what we want to share with our listeners is some thoughts about hurricane preparation. But is some of the difference in the number of storms we have because of the technology available to us and tracking Ooh. Abilities? So could it also be a function of we right. understand differently or are able to capture differently today? Because I think the perception of all of us would be that there are more storms, right? But I wonder sometimes whether there's just better technology and information.
Yeah.
There's truth to that. Typically, that might only be one, maybe two storms a year. Because what you're saying is, in the past, maybe we didn't have the ability to recognize something
right.
as a tropical storm when it was out there, but we decided it wasn't. That is very true, and that does happen these days. But those are usually very weak systems and ones that don't make landfall anyway. But might that bump the numbers up one or two?
Yeah, maybe.
It might. But to me, again, more following up on what you'd said, so I will tell you, every year there are so many variables that come into play about how many storms are going to form, where the Saharan dust is setting up, how dense it is, how many waves come off of Africa, how warm the water temperature is it an El Nino, is it a La Nina, right. is it neutral? Those all will come into play every year, and our numbers will range anywhere from 12, 13 up to 25.
Right.
What isn't changing, in my opinion, is that the water has warmed. And these storms are pushing more water than they used to.
Hmm. So one other concept, you know, one other thing we hear often, again, for you to dispel or not. So we have the perception that storms are more powerful now. Is that true? Not true? And I say that obviously based on the temperature water question. I think that sometimes drives strength of storm. Are they more powerful today than we've seen in the past?
And that's exactly following up on what I was just saying, because the waters are warmer. They are. Look, And this is the thing that I think a lot of folks get into, and when you really get into a heated debate, and I have to break out the ban button. So
are we going to get the ban button?
Yeah, I'm a little concerned right now. So,
do I follow him? I'm not sure. Am I going to get banned?
I had to do two this morning.
Oh, wow.
But anyway, so what's happening is, okay, there's no debate. The waters are warmer now than they were 20, 30 years ago. They are. Those are values that you cannot ignore.
Right.
The question is, and this is where the ultimate questions lie, does that mean they will continue to warm at the same rate for 20 years or 40 years, or will they not? And I don't. And you asked me what my specialty is. That is not my specialty.
But there's somebody out there that will opine about that.
They're going to try. But the answer to your question is, if the water's warmer, the storms are stronger, period. There's nothing else more important than how warm that water is. So if a hurricane goes over a pocket of extremely warm and deep warm water, it will get stronger. Mm. So the answer, the two go hand in hand. Yes, the waters right now in many places are warmer, the Western Caribbean, the Western and Central Gulf, not the Eastern Gulf, believe it or not. Right now we're actually about average. Mm. The Eastern Atlantic is below average. So that will vary. But what doesn't vary is if a storm goes over one of those areas of warm water, that thing is going to blow up. And that's exactly what happened with Milton last year.
Right. It went from nothing to holy cow.
Cat 7, if you will. And they had 185 mile an hour winds.
Terrifying. Wow.
Okay, so how are we feeling? I feel like
I don't think Shannon's feeling very well, right? Based on the visual, Shannon's
she's like, okay,
she's
what do we
left
do
the interview and she's like,
yeah, so how are we feeling? We haven't even really completely honestly recovered. We know we have programs to help people. So, you know, I'm just anticipating what you're going to say about this year's hurricane season. Mm. So
we'll have fewer storms than formed last year. I'm pretty confident about that, yeah.
There's a if you haven't caught the subtlety of his language, there's a but.
I'm waiting. That's why my face is paused.
Now, I would say, okay, look, first of all, I think long-range hurricane forecasting is a total waste of time, and I hate it.
Yeah.
Okay. And I'll tell you why. Because let's say we have 30 named storms, and they're all in the middle of the ocean. They don't hit anybody.
We don't care.
Who cares?
Right.
You have, but that technically was an active season, 30 storms, but it didn't hit anybody.
Yeah, but I don't care unless they're coming
exactly.
here.
Exactly. So let's say we only have 4 named storms. Right. It's a really quiet year, but one hits us as a Cat 4. Mm. Are we going to think it's a quiet year?
Our viewpoint's much different.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So I think so the whole long-range hurricane forecasting is a disservice and misleading in so many ways because, again, I don't care how many form. I will tell you, realistically, because we're no longer in a La Nina, we're more neutral. Because the water's a little cooler in the Eastern Atlantic, for a lot of reasons, we'll probably overall have a few less storms this year. I think the general perception is about 15 to 20 named storms, about 9 hurricanes and 3 majors. That's about what the average Colorado state, NOAA comes out with theirs May 22nd, and my guess is they're going to go about that same number. But again, all we care about
is the one that's So one of the things I read, and again, I think one of the things you're being really clear about that every listener should understand is that there's a lot of conjecture and opinion in these matters. Some of it scientific formed and well thought out, and some of it simply just throwing things out there. So for you, we have heard a couple of different times that the East Coast is going to be much more active this year than the Gulf Coast. Any theory behind that as to why? Is that the warmer water?
No, it's actually the positioning of the Bermuda High. So there is a big area of high pressure in the Atlantic. It's really simple, actually. If that high is closer to us, it'll push storms closer to us. If that storm is farther away from us, the storms will probably stay offshore. I will tell you something. I found this interesting. If you go back and look at September, which is the busiest month historically of the hurricane season, if you look at the tracks of the majority of storms that form in the month of September, over 60% of them stay offshore and never hit the U.S. They stay in the Atlantic and they don't hit anybody. So the odds are, and if they do hit someone, it's usually the Outer Banks or the Carolinas. Right. They're sticking out there. Mm-hmm. Interestingly enough, think about, and I don't want to jinx South Florida, think about the East Coast and South Florida over the last 10, 15 years.
Right, nothing.
They had nothing.
Right. When I lived on the East Coast for a long time, and that whole corridor, I was in Jacksonville, which, much like Tampa, has the perception that they always get missed, right? Mm-hmm. Right. For whatever reason, whether it's...
They have. Jacksonville never gets hit.
Right. And what is it here? Yeah, there are fairies, or what are there? No, trolls?
It's, no,
what's
it's
the thing
Indian
here?
Chief.
Indian burial ground.
That's
yes.
right.
Safety Harbor.
Yes.
Right. It's good that we have protection. Sure. You know, but it, you're right. Some of the most devastating storms of Florida were on in the East Coast, certainly down in the
Andrew.
Southern, right, that we think about. So when all of us listen and pay attention to, and as we start to move into storm season, we're all kind of, as we said, we're a week in, and as we think about storm seasons, what are the things that you would tell people? I think you do this on your show, but we'll get out ahead of it a little bit. What are the things that you would say to people, like, here are three things you need to focus on?
The biggest one by far, and if there's three, there's a giant one and a little two and a little three, because it really is the key to everything. It's the expression, you hide from the wind, you run from the water.
Mm.
There's nothing more important. And boy, if we didn't see that last year with Helene.
Yeah.
I remember driving down in Pinellas County, driving on Alt-19 after Helene, and you look on the east side, there wasn't really much damage. You look on the west side, everybody's belongings were on their front yard.
Yes.
I've never seen anything like it. Yeah. It was gut-wrenching.
Yes.
And some of those people evacuated, and some of them didn't evacuate. Yeah. And unfortunately, we had people die in Pinellas County who drowned because they did not evacuate. And I look at what happened, and I think about that. And in terms of this year, I wonder, are people going to be more likely to evacuate this year if we were to have a similar setup with Helene as opposed to last year? I would like to think after seeing what they saw, they would go. I don't know if that's going to play out that way, but I do think that's going to be the biggest thing. But yes, if you live in a flood zone and you know that a surge, look, now we have a benchmark. Now we know what a 6 or a 7 or an 8 foot surge will do.
Mm-hmm.
Now before, we haven't had anything like that for forever. Yeah. The no-name storm back in the 90s was not a hurricane. It hit in March, but it brought us a 6 foot surge, 4 to 6 foot. And you know, now we're like, all right, well, if the forecast of a surge is 7 or 8 feet, we kind of know now what a 7 or 8 foot surge is. One thing I think it's important to remind people, and I learned this year as well from the Hurricane Center. So when they issue, when the hurricane, and my point is, you'll see this everywhere on social media. So you'll see a map and you'll see numbers. Here's the surge forecast, right? When a surge forecast comes from the Hurricane Center, if they say 8 to 12 feet, that does not mean that they actually are expecting an 8 to 12 foot surge. What it means, their forecast, it means that is the most, by definition, that is the most reasonable worst case scenario. And that's important.
Yeah, because it could be substantially.
Yes.
It could be a lot less. But their goal is to tell people, this is the worst it could be, so you need to act accordingly based on what the worst could be. They don't ever want to be, we didn't know.
Yeah.
Right.
Ever. But I do think that's an important question. If there's an 8, and Helene was a perfect example, because they were going 8 to 12, and I was saying on TV 6 to 7.
Mm.
Because, and boy, that's a challenge, because if they're hearing this on one side and hearing this on the other side, who do you believe? Who do you listen to?
And I think you said before, people often flock to the worst news.
Mm. Yeah, they do.
Right.
And in that case, maybe it's not a bad thing because right. they're at least going to be more prepared.
Right.
But it's my job to tell people what to really expect. Yeah. And I think when we're on TV continuously and on social media as well, I really go in depth and I try to explain, like this conversation, I will explain that. People will not... If they follow me, they'll know that that's not my mm-hmm. forecast. They'll know it's the worst case scenario, and then they have to decide. And that's something I can never answer. And that the question that I get most of all, should I evacuate?
Mm-hmm.
And I cannot answer
you would
that
never,
question.
You right. would never want to answer that.
No, because what happens, and here's my thought, and right. something maybe people don't even think about. What if I say, yeah, you should evacuate, and they die in a car crash
right.
evacuating somewhere?
Or the storm changes and you send them into danger, or any number of conditions that...
You, you can't do it. Now, what I will do, and I do this, I tell them what my family's doing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very transparent with that.
Yeah.
And I think people's thoughts are, well, if he's going, like, what I did with Milton, I got a hotel reservation in Jackson, because I'm at work and my family can't go to work with me, so I'm at work. So I got a reservation in Jacksonville and I got a reservation in Fort Myers because we weren't sure where that storm was going to go. So if it was going to go south, they were going to go north and vice versa. And they did. Yeah. And they went to Jacksonville and they were fine. And what was interesting is my wife said, there was a big conference room at the hotel they stayed at, and most of the people in that hotel were Tampa transplants, and they were all watching my stream.
Which is kind of cool. It.
Your wife said, I know him.
Yeah. I know that guy.
Well, actually, this leads to a really weird question. What is your situation when you're at the station? Like, do you have a cot? Mm. Like, how are you? Nobody stays up for it. Like, how do you go? I know you have Diet Dr. Pepper and you have Hot Pockets, but what's like the situation there?
They showers? Do bring in, we do have one shower. Uh-huh. And they do bring in air mattresses and stuff. And, you know, I think a lot of – I've got a lot of kids. We got a lot of air mattresses anyway. But typically, there's no sleep, at least for us. I mean, for other people, yes. But when we're on air
– the adrenaline and the Diet Dr. Pepper.
Your time.
You even if you want to sleep, you wouldn't
you're
be.
Too, you can't because then you're concerned with what am I going to miss? You have a responsibility, right? Yeah. So you talked about like being at the station, but how can people find you? Because you know, digital's kind of king. Where do they need to go to stay up to date?
So many different ways these days.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's digital streaming, whether it's the apps, whether it's Facebook, Instagram, TikTok.
Yeah, you're on all the social.
We are. And what I found funny is for some reason recently I saw this and I was looking at some reels that were showing up from last year. And there were so many reels where people were just, it was them, this is Floridians right now, and they were just refreshing my page over and over and over again.
Sounds because
I was doing that.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people did.
Yes.
And people ask, do you sleep during hurricane season? And the answer to the question is usually maybe an hour, maybe 90 minutes a day, and that's about it. Because at least when a storm is anywhere near, because I am updating 24/7 because I know people want information 24/7.
Yeah. You know, I know we're getting closer to the end of, but I have one more important question. Jim Cantore.
You want his cell phone number?
No.
I don't want him coming here.
Yeah.
That's always the joke.
It's a funny thing. One of my favorite commercials is watching. There's one where he's in a grocery store and people see him in the grocery store shopping and they just start running out of the grocery store.
I would like drop my groceries.
Because if folks don't know, the thing about Jim is wherever he is where the storms are. I will tell you. That's not so much the case lately. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've got a lot of younger Mets that go out there, and I think Jim still wants to be involved in it, but, you know, that's tricky. And what they'll do is he'll end up one place, and then maybe they'll relocate 12 hours later as the forecast changed. Because think about Milton and think about Irma and Ian. Those forecasts changed dramatically. Yeah. I mean, originally they were Panhandle, then they were us. Then they ended up Fort Myers, all in about a 36-hour stretch. Yeah. So, I mean, he's going up and down all over the place trying to keep up with it.
I just want to say from my perspective, I am a watcher and a listener. And, you know, whenever we go through, we're responsible for a whole lot of folks being taken care of. And so we need to have the best information possible. We need to understand where we have to be positioned, right? Because we're positioning trucks, teammates, trying to make sure that as soon as the storm hits, we're ready to respond. And our entire organization follows you. And so by extension, that allows us to take care of the community much more thoughtfully and thoroughly. And because when we show up with food the day after or the day of, and sometimes the day before, all those things matter deeply to our work and to our neighbors. So thank you for your maybe unacknowledged partnership, but please know you're a significant part of and a partner in our work, and we appreciate that.
It's a group effort. And this is the first time I've been inside this building, and it's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's Category 5 rated.
Yes.
I was saying, I took some pictures. I was sending them to my kids. Look at this building. Yeah. It is so amazing. So seriously, congratulations on all that you do as well.
Thank you.
We'll have to have you and the family over for a tour.
I'd love to.
We would love to have you. So we kind of wrap up with a question. And, you know, for us, I learned from Thomas when I joined Feeding Tampa Bay that so many great things happen around a table. So you're at a table. You can invite three guests. They can be with us, not famous or not. Who's around your table? And then after that, what are you serving?
Oh, my gosh. Boy, that's a hard, that might be the hardest question I think I've ever been asked. Holy cow. I would probably start, honestly, two of the three, I hate to say this, but my mom and my dad.
Yeah.
You know, because my kids never got to meet them.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, it was, yeah. That's something that I think they would love to be a part of. And the third one, so I'm a big baseball guy.
Okay.
I'm a massive baseball guy. So maybe somebody like, I don't know, Babe Ruth or Ooh. Mickey Mantle or, because all of my kids, matter of fact, June 7th, Evan Longoria, they're retiring
yes.
his number. We have a dog named Longo. He's 12. and so we are a massive baseball family. And so my son is flying in from New Orleans to go to the game.
Oh, wow.
All of our kids are going to go to that game to honor Evan Longoria, you know, as a big Rays guy. But honestly, you know, what would we serve? Now, that's an interesting question, too. And I'm all about family traditions.
Yeah.
We, on New Year's Eve, we have this family tradition, and it came from my dad, where we have a penny of that year in our hand, a sardine with a cracker, and a glass of champagne. And the penny brings money into your home, and then everybody has it in their hand. And so my kids will have four or five of them, one for their house, one for my house, you know, wherever. And you take those pennies, and you put them over your door, and it's supposed to bring money into your home for that upcoming year. And it is a big family tradition. Well, last year, I actually went on eBay, and I was lucky because it's turned into a massive thing where they bring their friends, and they bring, we have 50 people. So I went on eBay and bought 100 new pennies and had them sent to me. So everybody had their penny. But the reason I bring this up is because that New Year's dinner was always the biggest meal for my family. So following the family tradition theme with my mom and dad there, we'd probably have black-eyed peas, and we'd have ham, and we'd have a traditional New Year's dinner for our family because I'm a big family guy. Yep. I am that guy next door, and you know, we have such a close-knit group of kids that I do anything I can to try to share that with them. And unfortunately, like I said, they didn't get to meet their grandparents. But that would probably be a way.
Mom amazing. And Dad and the Babe.
Yeah,
yep.
Yeah, yeah. Mickey Mantle. Yeah,
yeah. You can squeeze them in. They can share a chair.
Maybe Ben Franklin, too, because, I mean, he was, like, apparently one of the first meteorologists in the world as well.
Oh,
it's always
go.
An interesting question, isn't it? Because you think about the people in your world. We often hear people say, a parent.
Yeah.
Yeah, yes. Because it's, you know, for many of us, and you just said this, our parents didn't get to see us at what we might consider our, like what we became.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And for all of us, that's such an important, you know, Shannon lost her mom last year. And it's one of those things that you want your parents to know who you became.
Yep.
And it's funny you say that. I won't even get into this, but I was adopted. Mm. Right. So I found my birth mother and just after I started doing what I'm doing, and I had a conversation with her about how I'm sure how difficult it was for her to
make that decision.
Give
yes.
me up. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I reached out to her and just thanked her, saying, look, I mean, there's a lot of other drama that went along with it, but I said, look, I'm living a dream.
Mm. Yeah.
And you made a decision that allowed that to happen.
Yeah. Wow.
And if it had not have happened, who knows where I would have ended up.
Does everybody agree we need to have him back? We
got to explore that. That's a story. That in itself, you have no idea how scandalous the story is. It's a good one.
Yeah.
Oh, no. We're having you back for that one. Plus, you're also helping us out a little bit because we have our disaster convening right? That we're getting all of these. Thomas, why don't you explain what that is?
Yeah, one of the things that we really want to, you know, as mentioned, our goal as an organization is to be prepared ahead of time and make sure families are prepared food-wise, have the resources they need. We also supply cleaning supplies, other things like that, to make sure the families are as safe as possible, diapers for moms. And so we actually, after the last storm season, convened a group of folks together to say, we need to learn what we can do better, how we can do it better. And so we're convening a group of, I think, close to 100 different leaders here on campus that are involved, counties, cities, partners, to have a conversation and say, are we all prepared? Do we know who each other are? Because often in our world, those that provide social services don't know each other and don't connect on a regular basis. But the coordination of service becomes so critical in the aftermath of storms. And so part of our goal is, one, having you on as a guest allows us to have this conversation. But number two, I know you'll record some remarks for the event, is to bring people together to make sure that we are as effective, ready, and capable as we can be. Because one of the things we'd like the listener to understand is where a storm hits is a matter of arbitrary nature. But the folks that we serve are generally the ones that are least prepared because they have the least resources to get prepared. Right. We would tell people to go get water and go get, well, a lot of our families can't go do that.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They don't have the resources. And so we want to make sure they're better prepared. And then after a storm, the folks we serve are disproportionately impacted by the ability to recover. Right. They don't have the means or the resources. And so we want to make sure that we do as good a job taking care of as many of our neighbors as we may have to in this upcoming season. So we want to bring everybody together and say, let's make sure we're all ready to go.
Right. And plus, you just like last year, there were a lot of people that came into our care who never imagined they would be.
Yes.
Right. So we just need to take care of folks and be prepared, and organizing and convening and collaborating will help make sure folks don't get missed.
We're a blue skies organization, meaning we're here every single day of every single year. But we have learned that our responsibilities, opportunities and obligations during storms are far different. We just want to make sure we're better at it.
Well, Dennis, thank you, my friend.
My pleasure. By the way, you guys are pretty good at it.
Thank you.
Pretty amazing.
Thank you.
Thanks for inviting me. It was really fun.
Yeah. Absolutely. And everybody, go onto your social channels and follow Dennis. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And
hopefully you won't see me too much this summer.
Yeah.
Hopefully you'll get some sleep and your family will see you.
Yeah, people will be like, I don't want to see that guy's face ever again after last year. I get it. I do get it.
Right. Well, you know, I think this is definitely an episode where there's a lot of great takeaways for our audience. I know, especially after last year, I'm sure everyone has their ears like very perked up for like, please tell us what to do. What did you guys learn from today that you think every listener, if they didn't listen to the whole episode, like what's one thing they have to take away from this?
You know, I'm always incredibly impressed by someone that has such a passion for their profession, mm-hmm. right? I think one of the compliments we often get as an organization is that people feel like we are, this is all us, this is all in us. It is so wonderful and inspiring to hear someone, aside from all the terrific information that I heard today, what I kept thinking over and over again as I was listening is, how lucky are we to have someone in this profession, in our community, where the information he provides is so important, be that passionate, that dedicated, and care that much about the work that he does in the community he serves.
Yeah.
Pretty much on the same line.
No, I got that one. You have to come up with your own.
Because it's the authenticity of it all and trusting someone to give you the information that you need. And I think it's really important. Not that there aren't other wonderful professionals in Tampa Bay, but you know, some folks, how they are, can create a relationship with you from afar, from a TV screen or your phone, and you just feel like you know who they are. So hopefully I don't get, what is it, the button? By saying?
Band.
The bang button.
Band button.
Band,
yeah. Band button.
What,
yeah.
What did you learn?
I really liked what you said about what Dennis was saying about like having two plans, like during the storm. Like I think that I've heard people, you know, be like, well, I'll go up to Orlando, and then they get hit in Orlando. So
yes,
I know that after last year, a lot of us are probably trying to think a little more ahead about like, okay, what if this? What if this? Like, have some kind of plan if you do have to get out. So yeah,
boy, what a great, we're so lucky to have him as a guest.
Yeah, absolutely,
it was.